ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Chapter 21. Chapter 21 is entitled The Movements of the Sun. Today we are on text 30. There is no vocative for this verse, so we'll just go to a translation straight. Yasya.
Yasya.
Of which.
Of which.
Ekam.
Ekam.
One.
One.
Chakram.
Chakram.
Wheel.
Wheel.
Vadasha.
Vadasha.
12.
12.
Aram.
Aram.
Spokes.
Spokes.
Shat.
Sir.
Six.
Six.
Nemi.
Nemi.
The segments of the rim.
The segments of the rim.
Trinabhi.
Trinabhi.
The three pieces of the hub.
The three pieces of the hub.
Samvatsara Atmakam.
Samvatsara Atmakam.
Whose nature is a Samvatsara. Saman. Samamananti. They fully describe. Tasya.
The
chariot of the sun god. Akshaha. The axle. Mero. Of Sumera mountain. Sumeru mountain, sorry. Murdhani.
On the top.
Kritaha.
Fixed.
Manasatore. On the mountain known as Manasatora. Krita. Fixed. Itara Bhagaha. The other end. Yatra. Where. Protam. Fixed on. Ravi Ratha Chakram. The wheel of the chariot of the sun god.
The wheel of the chariot of the sun god.
Taila Yantra Chakravat.
Taila Yantra Chakravat.
Like the wheel of an oil pressing machine.
Like the wheel of an oil pressing machine.
Ramat. Moving. Manasatora Giro.
Manasatora Giro.
On Manasatora Mountain.
On the Manasatora Mountain.
Parigramati.
Parigramati.
Turns. Translation by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The chariot of the sun god has only one wheel, which is known as Samvatsara. The 12 months are calculated to be its 12 spokes. The 6 seasons are the sections of its rim, and the 3 Chaturmasya periods are its 3 section hub. One side of the axle carrying the wheel rests upon the summit of Mount Sumeru, and the other rests upon Manasatora mountain. Affixed to the outer end of the axle, the wheel continuously rotates on Manasatora mountain like the wheel of an oil pressing machine. There's no purport, so we'll read text 14. Translation. As in an oil pressing machine, this first axle is attached to a second axle which is 1/4 as long. 3,937,500 yojanas or 31,500,000 miles. The upper end of the second axle is attached to Dhruvaloka by a rope of wind. Again, no purport, so we'll read text 15. My dear king, the carriage of the sun god's chariot is estimated to be 3,600,000 yojanas, which is 28,800,000 miles long, and 1/4 as wide. 900,000 yojanas or 7,200,000 miles. The chariot's horses, which are named after Gayatri and other Vedic meters, are harnessed by Arunadevi to a yoke that is also 900,000 yojanas wide. This chariot continuously carries the sun god. Purport. In the Vishnu Purana, it is stated, Gayatri cha brihati ushni, jagati trishtuk eva cha, anushtuk panktir iti uktas, Chandan, Chandansi, Chandamsi Harayo Rave. The 7 horses yoked to the sun god's chariot are named Gayatri, Brihati, Ushnik, Jagati, Trishtuk, Anushtuk, and Pankti. These names of various Vedic meters designate the 7 horses that carry the sun god's chariot. ओम अज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं मुखं करोति वाचालं पङ्गुं लङ्घयते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुदीनतारिणं वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण So we have been discussing the movement of the sun since the past few verses. It's a very small chapter, it will get over in the next two verses. So 19th verse is the last verse of this chapter. So after describing the structure of the universe, Sukadeva Goswami has now moved on, like towards the end of the previous chapter, he started glorifying the sun god and the position of the sun planet within this universe, like the supreme position it holds. And now he has gone in detail to describe the movements of that particular sun planet in this universe. So we have been hearing various speakers speak on different aspects of the sun god, its glories and the distances. It's quite an astronomical and philosophical discussion about all these distances and all that. I'm sure astrologers derive a lot from all these aspects of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the sun god is also glorified. Not only in the Bhagavatam like Sukadeva Goswami is doing, but he is also glorified in Brahma Samhita. In 5.52, he is glorified by Lord Brahma. We all know that verse, Yer Chakshu Desha Savita Sakala Grahanam Raja Samasta Sura Murti Rashesha Tejaha Yasyad Naya Samvriti Brahmati Samvriti Kala Chakro Govinda Madhi Purushan Tamaham Bhajami. Let me worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, who is the original person and under whose order the sun, who is the king of all planets, Raja Samasta, so he is the king of all planets, assumes immense power and heat. The sun represents the eye of the Lord, it says no, Chakshur. So he represents the eye of the Lord and traverses its orbit in obedience of his order. Samvriti Kala Chakra, so he is traversing in obedience of the Lord. So his position as the king of every planet is glorified by Lord Brahma also in the Brahma Samhita. But obviously he is doing all this under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's actually a glorification of the Supreme Lord. So this orbit, which is mentioned in the Brahma Samhita, which is carried out by the sun god in accordance with the will of the Lord, is actually described in detail in this chapter 21 of Srimad Bhagavatam. So we've been studying the structure of the universe, we are studying the movement of the sun. The next chapter will be the orbits of the planets, where we will go in detail about how each planet is orbiting with reference to the Dhruv star or the pole star. All this conversation also happened in the Mahabharata. So when I was preparing for the class, I was doing some research, and there is a conversation just before the war starts in the Bhishma Parva of the Mahabharata. There is a Bhumi Parva within Bhishma Parva where Vyasadeva is coming and instructing Dhritarashtra. So there, you know, Vyasadeva has offered Dhritarashtra that he said that the war is about to start. So first Vyasadeva is describing, he is the father of Dhritarashtra. He is describing the whole setting. And then he is telling Dhritarashtra that I can give you Divya Chakshu to see the whole war. But Dhritarashtra refuses. He says, no, I don't. Because Vyasadeva starts predicting already to Dhritarashtra that all this, you know, massacre is going to happen and so many people are going to die. So he starts predicting all this to Dhritarashtra, and Dhritarashtra, obviously being very attached to his sons, he says, no, I don't want this Divya Chakshu to see, but I would like to know what's going on in the battlefield. So then Vyasadeva says, okay, I will bless this Sanjaya. He will be able to sit here, see whatever is happening, and he'll describe it to you. So in that when, you know, Vyasadeva is giving all these instructions to Dhritarashtra, over there also this whole structure of the universe is mentioned in detail. All the Varshas, you know, the Dvipas, Varshas that we have been studying in the previous chapter, which ocean is separating which Dvipa, everything is given in detail in that particular conversation between Vyasadeva, Dhritarashtra and Sanjaya. And it is also predicted, like I said, you know, there is lot of predictions which Vyasadeva gives based on the movements. And he says, I can see the sun doing like this, I can see the planets doing like this, I can see this nakshatra, you know, the combinations of nakshatra which are not very good. So he says, I can see these nakshatras are combining to, it's all evil omens. That's basically what he's trying to tell Dhritarashtra and prepare them for the impending death of his sons. So this orbit is also called as Kala Chakra, like we saw in the Brahma Samhita verse. So this is how time is set into motion because of Surya Dev's orbit around the Manasatora and the Sumeru mountain. That is how time is set into motion, and that is how we see days and nights like continuously go by, and people come, people die, living entities create, they maintain for some time and then they are there. So he is the king of all planets. And why is he called the king of all planets? Raja Samasta Suramurti. He is called the king of all planets because no life is possible without sun on this earth planet. On this earth or in the entire universe for that matter. He is the giver of heat. He is the source of immense heat and he is the source of immense light. So even the, you know, the power of sight, like some people have very good eyesight. I have poor one, as you can see from my glasses. But some people have very good eyesight. But even that eyesight is useless if there is no sunlight. Like in the darkness, if it's pitch dark, the best eyesight person also cannot see. So he is the giver of heat and light, and no life can exist without the sun. And therefore if we see, because he is rotating in the Manasatora mountain and the Loka mountains, which we read about in the previous chapter. So the sunlight only goes till there. Beyond Loka mountain, there is darkness, full darkness, and therefore there is no life also over there. So we read how when Krishna was taking Arjuna to see Vishnu, to retrieve the sons of the Brahmin, we see that when he goes actually beyond the Loka mountain, he has to actually keep a Sudarshan Chakra in the front. Because it's completely dark. Because the sunlight is not going over there, the Loka mountains are taller than the orbit of the sun. So there is not a pinch of sunlight which goes there, and therefore it's jet black or very dark. And then the Sudarshan Chakra lights up the whole path for Krishna and Arjuna to travel. So because there is no light over there, there is no life also over there, beyond the Loka mountains. So that is the importance of the sun god in giving light. He is the life and soul of this universe in that sense. So the current sun god who is there, his name is Vivasvan. And we hear about this Vivasvan in the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna is telling Arjuna that before you, I had imparted this science to the sun god Vivasvan. So he was the first disciple of Lord Krishna to receive direct instructions from Krishna about the science of the Bhagavad Gita. So that is the important position which the sun god or Vivasvan holds. So in fact, the appearance and disappearance of Krishna, like Prabhupada uses the appearance and disappearance of the sun to make us understand about the appearance and disappearance of Krishna. So in many purports, Prabhupada describes that the appearance and disappearance of Krishna is like the movement of the sun. So just as the sun does not cease to exist when it is out of our vision, you know, just because it rises in the east, that does not mean the east is the father of the sun or the mother of the sun. That does not mean like that. And it does not mean that just because it is rising in the east, the sun is not present anywhere else. Obviously, it's present somewhere else in some other country or in some other part of the universe it is present. So in the same way, Prabhupada says that just because Krishna is appearing in one place, that does not, and then disappearing from that place, winding up his fastness and going away, that does not mean that he is ceasing to exist. And Prabhupada says this can be best understood by the sun, the movement of the sun. It is not that the sun ceases to exist just because, let's say, it's night in Melbourne. No, it is obviously, we know, we have studied enough science, we know the sun is already there somewhere else. So the sun is eternally existing. Eternally means still the universe is existing. It is existing in all parts of this universe. And it's just that it is appearing in one place and it is coming into our vision and then it is going out of our vision from that particular place. So in the same way, Lord Krishna appears in our vision for some time and then he goes out of our vision for some time. But it is as soon as he is going out of our vision here, obviously he is there in the vision of somebody else. So Prabhupada says that for Krishna's these pastimes that are happening, as soon as Putna gets killed over here, she is getting killed in another universe. Then she is getting killed in another universe. So that is how, you know, eternal the pastimes of Krishna. Or he is lifting Govardhan Parvat here, next moment he is lifting in another universe, next moment he is lifting in another universe. Like that continuously his pastimes are going on, just as continuously the sun is existing everywhere in this universe. In fact, it is said also that when a jiva leaves, you know, we were caught up seeing in the chapter before that, the destruction and all. So when the, and we studied it in our 12th canto with Keshav Prabhu, which is about to end up. Devedanta course is about to end now. So in that also we see that when destruction happens, there are four types of destruction. And the final destruction is when the soul actually gets liberation. He realizes his eternal position as the servant of the Lord and he gets liberated from this material universe. So that is also mentioned in the Bhagavatam, and we are seeing that Krishna's disappearance and appearance is explained to us by Srila Prabhupada through the movements of the sun. So Srimad Bhagavatam definitely concludes that the sun moves in its orbits and it's not stationary. So we heard again, you know, in the previous chapter, we will hear in the next chapter also about the geocentric and heliocentric model of the universe. And when the temple of Vedic planetarium comes, we will be able to see. They are, you know, going to depict this beautiful universe, the structure of the universe, and how everything is actually moving around the pole star. How that is the anchor, and even the sun actually orbits around the pole star. So modern, like, you know, it is not stationary as modern science is. We all studied in our school that the sun is stationary and all the planets are revolving around the sun. But in this case, we can see that the sun is moving and it actually moves very fast. The speed of the sun, I think, is 2000 yojanas or something like that per second. In a one moment, the sun is going that much distance. So it's rotating quite fast. The speed is very big. In fact, Uttrayanam and Dakshinayanam, we know that, you know, from that we come to know that the sun moves. So for 6 months, the sun moves on the northern side. And for 6 months, the sun moves on the southern side. And Prabhupada says that therefore we know that wherever there is summer, so we, because we live in the southern hemisphere, we can, you know, we are direct witnesses of this. So we have exactly opposite seasons in Australia. Like in India and other parts of the world, when there is summer going on in May, June, July, for us that is peak winter months in Australia. And December, January, February is peak winter in other countries. They are, you know, blanketed under snow. But we have proper summer. We are at the beach with thongs and all that. So we can see that this is because of the ayanam. The sky is divided in two sections. And for 6 months, the sun is on the northern side, which is called Uttrayanam, which is actually considered a very auspicious period. So again, speaking of Mahabharata and Bhishma Parva, where at the end of the Bhishma Parva, Lord Bhishma Dev actually dies and like he falls down. So that time it is described that he is waiting for Uttrayanam. That is why he is not leaving his, he had that boon, as we know, that he will leave his body at his choice, the choice of his, time of his choice. So he was waiting for Uttrayanam to happen. So even though he fell down many days ago, he still waited till Uttrayanam happened and then he left this world. So that is the movement of the sun. When it's in the northern side, it is very auspicious and, you know, many auspicious activities take place during that time. So, and we see in the verse that we read, the 13th verse that is there on the board, we see that there are 12 months which are calculated to be its 12 spokes of the wheel. So just understanding a little bit about the time, how time is calculated in according to Veda, astronomically. So it is given, Prabhupada says that one kruti, it starts with the tiniest measurement of time and the smallest measurement of time, which is called as one kruti. So one kruti is 8/13,500 seconds. That is one kruti. Then we move forward, the next one is one vedha, which is 8/135 seconds. Then we have one lava, which is 8/45 seconds. Now this lava word we have heard in the famous verse where it says lava matra sadhu sangha sarva siddhi hoy. So a moment of association of a sadhu can give us, open the doors of liberation, can give us Krishna bhakti. So that lava is actually 8/45 seconds. That much association of a sadhu is enough for someone who come into Krishna bhakti. So higher than that is one nimesha. One nimesha is 8/15 seconds. Then we have one kshana. One kshana is 8/5 seconds. So in India that word is used quite often. Vanshana, I will come in Vanshana. Vanshana means one moment. So actually you have to come back in 8.5 seconds. And then we have one pashta. One pashta is 8 seconds. Then one lagu. So one lagu is 2 minutes. Then we have one danda. One danda is 30 minutes. And then we have one prahara. So prahara we have heard many times. So one prahara is 3 hours. It lasts for 3 hours. And then we have one day, which is made up of 12 hours. And similarly, one night is also made up of 12 hours. And together, these days and nights together, it's one paksha. And one paksha is 15 days. So if you see in our calendars also, in the Hindu calendar especially, and even in our ISKCON calendars, it's mentioned. So we have something called Krishna Paksha and Shukla Paksha. So Krishna Paksha is the dark fortnight and the Shukla Paksha is the bright fortnight. So you know that is the phase from new moon to full moon to new moon. Like that cycle which goes on is called as one paksha. And two such pakshas or two such fortnights make up one month. And then the 12 months comprise one calendar year, which is what we are reading over here. That the 12 months are calculated to be 12 spokes. So that is the way time is calculated according to astronomy. Now the sun is situated vertically between Bhur and Bhuvan Loka, it is mentioned. So the sun rotates through the time circle of different zodiac signs. Again, you know, going by this verse, the translation of this verse and how each section of the wheel is representing different things. So the sun rotates through this time circle of different zodiac signs. Now we know there are 12 zodiac signs, so when we are born, we know which zodiac sign we are, like Scorpio, Capricorn, Sagittarius. So these are the 12 zodiac signs, and the sun goes through these 12 zodiac signs when it's rotating through its orbit. And it assumes different names according to the house or the constellation of the zodiac sign that it is in. So when the sun is in Capricorn, it has a different name. When it is in Sagittarius, it has a different name. Like that, it has different names when it goes. So the 1 month that we are talking about is actually equal to the time the sun spends in one of these zodiac signs. That is 1 month it is described. And the 2 months, so two zodiac signs are 2 months, constitute a season. And therefore there are 6 seasons, again like it mentions over here. The 6 seasons are the sections of its rim. So there are 6 seasons. We know only of 3 or 4 seasons. Actually in modern science we talk about 3 or 4 seasons only. But there are 6 seasons in a year. And these 6 seasons are Vasanta. Vasanta means spring. Then we have Grishma Rutu. Grishma Rutu is summer. Then we have Varsha Rutu, which is monsoon. So we don't have a monsoon season in Australia, in Melbourne especially. So when rain falls, anytime it wants to come. Spring also it's rain, winter also it's rain. So anytime, there is no monsoon season. But there is actually monsoon season in India. All of us are aware of that. So that is Varsha Rutu. Then there is Sharad Rutu, which is autumn. Then there is Hemant Rutu, which is called as pre-winter. And then there is Shishi, which is winter season. So these are the 6 seasons and they are nothing but the sun spending 2 months in 2 constellations. So that becomes one season. The 2 months it spends in 2 constellations. And the 12 months in total, the aggregate of these 12 months is called a Samvatsara, which is again what we are reading over here. The chariot of the sun god has only one wheel, which is known as Samvatsara. Now Samvatsara is a term which many Indians must have heard. Because Samvatsara is actually, you know, there are 60 Samvatsaras, it is mentioned. And then the cycle keeps repeating of those 60 Samvatsaras. So it is, obviously the Samvatsara is one wheel of the sun god's chariot. And in many cultures we have heard, I was seeing even in Telugu there is Samvatsara, in Kannada, in Gujarati I know we had Samvatsara. Because whenever the new year would happen, my mother would read that Panchang. Panchang is, you know, the whatever predictions are there for the next year, and which Samvatsara has started, what will it bring in the year, all those predictions are there. So right now I was seeing this 2021 Samvatsara is called Plava. And Plava Samvatsara is, you know, represented by wisdom and knowledge. So hopefully, you know, we all get some wisdom and knowledge from the study of our scriptures. So according to the movement of the sun, the moon and the other planets, the inhabitants of the universe, like through these orbits, going into different constellations, going into different zodiac signs, the inhabitants of the universe actually experience auspicious or inauspicious situations in their life. And that is called the influence of the planets on us. So we see that they are also called as dashas. So when you see astrology, like obviously Gangeshwar Prabhu can throw more light on this, but when we see our astrological charts, we see, oh, you have this dasha going on and that is why your period is not good, so health won't be good, for example. Or if the sun is in another house and that is an auspicious period, let's say, or it's an auspicious situation, then you will see increase in wealth. You might get a good job, or you might, you know, get some good position in your office, something like that. Or you might see that there is a disaster in the world because the sun is going through this particular constellation. So all these auspicious and inauspicious situations come in our lives because of the movements of these different planets through these different zodiac signs. And therefore it is said that the followers of Vedic culture do not neglect. You know, even Prabhupada was very careful about what time should be left, which is a good time, which is not a good time. Prabhupada was very careful about all this. So the followers of Vedic life and Vedic culture do not neglect the worship of the sun god. They actually said that people who do Agnihotra sacrifices and all that, they worship sun god for their own benefit. And they worship Surya Dev because of that. And not only in our Vedic culture, but in different, I was doing some research on the history of sun worship. And it is said that in many, many, many different cultures, the sun has always been worshipped. Now we might say that, you know, when we talk about Krishna, for example, or Ram, or any form of the Lord that has come in this world, sometimes people might say that no, he's an Indian god. Because they appeared in Bharatvarsha. Bharatvarsha is, you know, Punya Bhumi, so most of the incarnations take birth in Bharatvarsha. And therefore sometimes, you know, that tag comes as Indian god. But for the sun, no one can put that tag, that he's Indian god, because the sun is present everywhere. So the sun has been worshipped through many, many, many different civilizations and different cultures. The early Egyptians used to worship the sun god. The Romans used to worship Babylon. Babylonians used to worship Mexicans, Peruvians. They all used to worship the sun god. So in Egypt, or Egyptians used to call the sun god as Ra. And it is mentioned, like in the Egyptian culture, it is mentioned that Ra drives his chariot throughout the heavens. So see how much similarity is there between our understanding and their understanding. And Greeks also call the sun god as Helios. And they also say that yes, Helios travels on a chariot throughout the heavens. And to honor the sun god, or to celebrate the sun god, the Greeks actually create a huge chariot. A magnificent chariot is created, which is drawn by horses. So again, they know that the sun's chariot is drawn by horses. And then they take it on a cliff and towards the sea. That is how the Greeks celebrate. There's a huge procession in Greek culture. Even the Native Americans. So there is a tribe in Native Americans called the Plains tribe. And they also worship the sun god by doing what is called a sun dance. In honor of the sun god, they do it. Like in the early morning when the sun is rising, they do the sun dance. So coming back to Vedic culture, in India also, the sun god is worshipped. Generally, like sun god has been worshipped through all cultures. Like sometimes, you know, only Vaishnavas will worship Krishna, or Shaivites will worship Lord Shiva. But sun is universal. He is worshipped by all cultures, even in India. No one will say in our culture we don't worship sun god. No one will claim like that. So generally sun god is worshipped by offering arghya or water to sun god when the sun is rising in the morning, and by chanting of 12 mantras. So again, you know, speaking of my childhood, I remember my mother used to make me do that. She would give me water in one lota, copper is used usually. And she will make me go outside and offer water to the sun god. Whenever I wake up, obviously I was waking up at sunrise at that time. But usually sun god is worshipped at sunrise. And again at sunset as well, you know, he's offered and he's going to, so during the sandhya times he is worshipped. And there are 12 names of Surya which are chanted when worshipping the sun god. And these 12 names have different meanings, and they are really nice, the meanings of the names of the sun god. So the first name of Surya, the first mantra which is chanted when people worship Surya Dev by offering water, is Om Mitraya Namaha. And the meaning of this name is that he is the friend of everyone. He does not discriminate. He does not say, I will only favor this person because he is my friend and I will not favor this one. No, he gives his light and heat to everybody irrespective. He does not do bhed. Bhed, or he does not do that discrimination. So he is friend of everyone. The second mantra is Om Ravaye Namaha. Om Ravaye Namaha means Ravi, which means the shining or the radiant one. The third mantra is Om Suryaya Namaha. So Surya also, one of the meanings of Surya is also the soul. So he is the soul of this universe because he gives the light and heat, and he is the dispeller of darkness. That is also the meaning of Surya Namaha. Om Bhanave Namaha. That's the fourth mantra, which means the bright one or the one who illuminates everything. The fifth one is Om Khagaya Namaha. So the Khagaya Namaha is because he moves through the sky. Like I was mentioning, the sky is divided into two portions, and one side is northern side and one side is the southern side. And the ayans, the Uttrayanam and the Dakshinayam, happen because of the movement of the sun on the northern or the southern side. So that is Om Khagaya Namaha. Om Pushane Namaha. Pushane Namaha means he is giving nourishment and fulfillment. So that is the meaning of Pushane Namaha. Om Hiranya Garbhaya Namaha. That means the golden colored brilliant personality. So it is mentioned also that Hiranyagarbha is, or Vivasvan, these are the different names of the sun god. This is the personality who enters the sun planet, and therefore he is also called as Hiranyagarbhaya Namaha. Om Marichaya Namaha. Marichaya Namaha means he is the giver of light, infinite light. He keeps giving. Therefore he is also called Marichaya Namaha. Om Adityaya Namaha. So Adityaya Namaha because he is the son of Aditi. Now there are different versions for this. In the Markandeya Purana, it is mentioned that the origin of the sun is mentioned in the Markandeya Purana, that when we know that, you know, the universe was created and then Brahma is first born on the navel, from the navel of Lord Vishnu, and he's on top of that lotus flower, and then there's darkness everywhere and Brahma doesn't know. He's trying to find out the origin. He doesn't know what to do. Then he hears the lapping of the water against the stem of the lotus, and he hears the word tapa. So then he does austerities, and after that Brahma recites the mantra Om. It is said in the Markandeya Purana, and the Vedas also come out of his mouth. So it is said that this Om which came out of Brahma's mouth was very illuminating. It illuminated all the directions and the Vedas, because knowledge is also illuminating. So they illuminated the entire directions, and that became the sun god. And that is how the sun's origin is described. He is a combination of Om and the Vedas. So that is described in the Markandeya Purana. But in the Brahmanda Purana, it is described that the sun was born of Kashyapa and Aditi. Because Aditi is the mother of all the demigods. So she is the mother of the sun god as well, and therefore his name is Adityaya. So these are the two origins of the sun god. The next mantra is Om Savitre Namaha. Savitre Namaha means one who is responsible for life. The 11th mantra is Om Arkaya Namaha. Arkaya Namaha means worthy of praise or glory. He should be praised, he should be glorified. And the last mantra, the 12th Surya mantra, by offering water to Surya Dev, is Om Bhaskaraya Namaha, which means he gives wisdom. He is the giver of wisdom. And we heard that also. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was saying in the couple of days ago when he was giving class, that even Hanuman, who is considered the emblem of knowledge, he was a disciple of Surya Dev. He got his knowledge and he got all the Vedic instructions from Surya Dev. Surya Dev was saying that I don't have place in my school, and Hanuman said, I will learn from you while you are orbiting, no problem. And he said, but you should not face your back to me when I'm orbiting. So Hanuman was going backwards and he was listening to all the instructions from Surya Dev, and still he was able to keep up with the speed of Surya Dev, even though he was going backwards. So that is the glory of Hanuman. So this is how, by chanting the 12 mantras, Surya mantras, and offering water, Surya Dev is worshipped by millions of people across India. And it is mentioned, we know in the Bhagavatam, it is mentioned that Radharani and the gopis used to every day do Surya Puja. And on the north side of Radhakund, if we go, even today there is Surya Kund in Vrindavan. So that kund is the place where Radharani and the gopis used to go and worship Surya Dev. And obviously in that pretext they wanted to meet Krishna and have some pastimes with him. But they also regularly used to worship Surya Dev. And the modern way in which sun is worshipped, again, you know, it has become an integral part of yoga, is Surya Namaskar or sun salutations. So somebody has circulated a video some time ago, even when Narendra Modi, the Prime Minister of India, had gone to Japan on a visit, there were hundreds or thousands of Japanese who had, you know, assembled to welcome him, and they all did Surya Namaskar or sun salutation. So this is how, you know, modern people, so it's become a yoga sun, and obviously it promotes health and well-being, but the purpose of Surya Namaskar is to offer Namaskar, or it's actually to offer our gratitude to Surya Dev. And that is the purpose of the Surya Namaskar, which has become very popular all over the world. Now Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that Surya Atma Atma Veno Upasyaha, which means the actual life and soul of all living entities within this universe is the sun. Like we already saw, he is the life and soul, he is the king of all planets. And without him nothing can exist. No life can exist, nothing can exist in this universe without the sun. So therefore, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that he is Upashyaha, he is worshipable. And how do we worship? So Srila Prabhupada says that devotees, we generally worship sun god by chanting the Gayatri Mantra, the first Gayatri Mantra, which is also called as Brahma Gayatri. And which is, you know, in India you go in all the shops, most of the shops it will be sometimes playing outside the shops on a recorded, like we have Prabhupada jukebox like that, it keeps playing the Om Bhur Bhuva Swaha Mantra. So that is nothing but the way we worship sun god, because that mantra is sun god's mantra. When we start, like after Brahman initiation, when we do our Gayatri Japa. So we saw in the previous sections of Bharat Varsha, when you know different inhabitants of different Varshas were offering prayers, they always had one predominating deity in every planet. And Prabhupada says that all these deities in different planets, different Varshas are actually descendants of the sun and the moon. They are the origin of all these deities. So they come through the sun god. Even planet Earth, there are two Kshatriya, famous Kshatriya dynasties as we know. One is the sun dynasty and one dynasty is coming from the sun and one is coming from the moon. So it's called Surya Vanshi and Chandra Vanshi. And Lord Ramchandra, who is, you know, none other than Krishna, he appeared in the Surya Vansh and Krishna appeared in the Chandra Vansh. Even Raja Harishchandra, he had also appeared in the Surya Vansh. So like that Ikshvaku, it started with Ikshvaku and then all the dynasty came where Lord Ram also chose to appear. So these are the two famous dynasties which are also coming from the sun and moon, along with all the predominating deities of other planets. They are also actually coming from the sun and moon. Now much of all this information that we see, the movements of the sun, how much time it spends in each constellation, what is the speed at which it goes, all this information about the orbits of sun and different planets is actually derived from a book called Surya Siddhanta. And this was written in a very, very early, in some 800 BC or something like that it was written. And it is said that it was revealed by the sun god himself, actually. When we go back to the origin of Surya Siddhanta, Mayavana wanted to understand the glories of, you know, and the movement of the sun and all that. And there was astronomical books on that, but they had got lost. The knowledge had got lost. So Mayavana actually wanted to study it once again. And then Surya sends a messenger and he directly instructs Mayavana on the Surya Siddhanta. Now why we are mentioning about Surya Siddhanta book? Because none other than our Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur actually translated that book when he was very young. I think during his college days or something like that, he translated that book into Bengali language. So we know Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is Simha Guru. He is the lion guru. He was a cutting, guru who used to cut Sahajiyas and Mayavadis and all that. But he was also a very astute astrologer. He had studied astrology in great detail and therefore he was able to translate this book into Bengali language. And because he translated this book, he was given the title of Siddhanta from that time onwards. That is how he got the name Bhakti Siddhanta, and the Saraswati Goswami was given to him obviously when he took sannyas. So that's how the whole name is Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So as mentioned over here in verse 17, which had a purport, we saw that Arunadev is the chariot driver of the sun god. It is mentioned over here. Now Arunadev is none other than the brother of Garuda. And they both are the son, their mother is, I think, Sunita or Savita, I forgot that name. But so Arunadev is the brother of Garuda and he is also the chariot driver of the sun god, as mentioned in today's verse. Now the meaning of Aruna is one whose hue is reddish brown or maroonish or red or crimson color. That is the meaning of Aruna. That is why we see the Arunodaya, there is a prayer called Arunodaya prayer also in our song book. So that is the meaning of this Aruna, and he is the chariot driver of Lord Krishna. So he is also called as the god of red morning because of that. Now if we see in any vehicle or any chariot, when the chariot comes and we first see the chariot driver, You know, as soon as a chariot becomes visible to us, the first thing, person who becomes visible is the chariot driver, because he sits in front of the passenger, obviously. So therefore, when we see that the sun rises, the driver is first to be seen. And therefore we see, before we see the whole golden hue of the sun when it rises, we first see that the whole sky becomes a reddish color. There is a reddish hue in the sky, or there is like a crimson color in the sky, and that is because Aruna Dev is coming first. We are seeing him come first, and then we will see Surya Dev come first. So that is the significance of this chariot driver of Aruna Dev. So there is a very beautiful prayer which Prabhupada mentions in one of his purports for Aruna Dev. And I'll just read the translation of this prayer. It says, O Lord Aruna, chief of the Lord who transforms the horizon into red, your magnificent shine, your shine is like a mandala. You enthusiastically drive the mighty chariot of Surya Dev and thus make possible the arrival of dawn. To you, who is the color of blood, who is the commander of light, I offer my respectful obeisances. So this is beautiful prayer is there for Aruna Dev, because he actually brings dawn and then Surya Dev follows with a bright yellow color. Now it is also mentioned in this verse we saw that the upper axle of the Surya Dev's chariot is connected to Dhruvaloka. Because like we said, you know, Dhruvaloka, that will come in the next chapter when we see the orbits of the planets. Dhruvaloka is almost like the shape of a veil. I remember when we studied the 5th canto with Kesho Prabhu, we had gone into great detail and Prabhu had actually shown us some nice videos which are there about this. So it is in the shape of a veil or a fish or something like that, and every planet is actually anchored in its orbit or and connected to Dhruvaloka. Everybody pays respect to Dhruvaloka by going around Dhruvaloka or the pole star. So it is said that this sun chariot's axle is also connected to Dhruvaloka by a rope of wind. Now it does sound very esoteric when we see rope of wind here. There is wind everywhere. How do you imagine a rope of wind? But it is mentioned that, you know, I was again doing some research about this, and it is mentioned that there has to be, when we say these connections, these planets are fastened in their orbit to Dhruvaloka or the pole star, there must be some invisible plasma filaments which are connecting them in their orbit to the pole star. Now, modern science has proved this for us. So, there is an article which was published by the Maths and Physical Science Department of UCL. UCL is London's global university, where it is said that they have suddenly discovered, obviously through their astronomical tools like telescopes and all that, they have discovered that there is a magnetic rope which was observed for the first time between Saturn and Sun. So they found that connection between Saturn and Sun, but obviously it's a connection between all the planets through Dhruvaloka. So this magnetic rope, it states that in the article, that these twisted, helically structured magnetic fields are called flux ropes. And they are strong enough to keep planets pulled in their orbits. And this is what modern science also discovered. We see rope of wind. Sometimes if you tell to someone, they will just brush it off saying that you guys believe in mythology and what esoteric things you are saying. But this has been proved for us by science also, by none other than UCL, University of London. They are saying that there are magnetic ropes which are keeping everything in control. Like they are keeping them attracted, in, keeping them fixed in their orbit. Just as gravitational pull is keeping us, you know, on this Earth planet. In the same way, these high magnetic, electromagnetic ropes are keeping them all fastened in their orbits. Now coming to the next, so we spoke about Aruna Dev, and then it is also mentioned that the chariot, sun's chariot, is drawn by 7 horses. And we saw in the verse, in the translation, Prabhupada writes that these 7 horses are the Vedic meters. So Vedic meters is also called a Vedic prosody. Prosody means the different types of chandas which are used in poetic language. So therefore these are the 7 Vedic meters of chandas which are used, which we read the description where it says that it is Gayatri, Brihati, Ushnik, Jagati, Trishtup, Anushtup and Pankti. So these are the different chandas or the meters in which poetry is written or Sanskrit language is written. So these that is represented by these 7 horses. It is also described in, you know, different parts. Obviously we don't know whether it is proved in the Bhagavatam or in the Vedas, but that these 7 horses are of different colors. Each of the horses of different color, and therefore they are also called, they represent Vibgyor. Vibgyor is when, you know, sunlight is white and then it gets divided into these seven colored lights, and you know that these are the lights we see in the rainbow as well. So each horse represents a different color in that Vibgyor. Violet, indigo, blue, red, orange, yellow, all those colors are there of the, for the horses, because that's the sunlight which is getting divided into these different colors by the seven horses. And the seven horses also represent the 7 days of the week. So Sunday to Monday, they represent the 7 days of the week. So the Vedic meters, the seven colors of Vidyor and the 7 days of the week, all three are represented by these seven horses. So this is a little bit about the description of the sun planet, the movement of the sun, and you know, Aruna Dev and the horses. Now we'll spend the next few minutes discussing some of the glories and how sun is and he's a servant of the Lord, and he does not, he carries out the order of the Lord very diligently and religiously. So we heard, you know, and the previous speakers were also saying that, and we saw in this verse which we discussed from Brahma Samhita, how the sun is rotating in its orbit under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now if the sun moves even slightly from its orbit, we might burn, because too much heat will come on the to the planets, and if it moves even little bit away, we might freeze to death. So it is perfect. Krishna's arrangement is perfect in terms of the sun's orbit, and the sun is also a faithful and loyal servant. He doesn't think, okay, let me experiment and see. Thoda idhar jata ho, thoda I'll go a little bit this side or that side. No, he's a very very obedient servant of the Supreme Lord. And we see this in many other pastimes as well. There are beautiful pastimes where the sun god is an obedient servant of the Supreme Lord. So the first is, he's obviously, we already discussed, he's the first disciple of Lord Krishna, whom Lord Krishna imparted the science of Bhagavad Gita, Vivasvan. The description is there in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So that is how he serves the Lord. He also serves as a bridge between Vrindavan and Dwarka pastimes. So it is mentioned by in Lalita Madhava, which is a book written by Rupa Goswami, where once Krishna had left Vrindavan and gone, the Radharani and all the gopis were facing immense separation from Krishna. And because of their immense separation, they were all ready to give up their bodies. So some of the go, like one of the gopi goes on top of Govardhan Parvat and gives up a body over there, it is said. Some of them just enter into a cave and go into Samadhi. And coming to Radha Rani, she was everywhere, she was seeing Krishna. Anything black she would see, she would remember Krishna. That much separation she was feeling from Krishna. So one day she was sitting on the bank of the Yamuna. And we all know the color of the Yamuna is slightly blackish blue. So when Radha Rani saw this, she suddenly went into transcendental ecstasy and into viraha bhav, like the separation from Krishna. And that ecstasy was so strong, because she was remembering Krishna through the color of the Yamuna, that she dived into the Yamuna. And it is mentioned that once she dived into the Yamuna, Surya Dev actually comes and rescues her from the Yamuna, and he takes her to his house or to his planet. And there Radharani stays for some time with Surya Dev, and then Surya Dev comes and gives his daughter to King Satrajit. And that is none other than she becomes Satyabhama in Dwarka Leela. So this is the transition that happens from Vrindavan to Dwarka. And that is, you know, Lalita Madhava is that play which was written by Rupa Goswami to show how every gopi again comes in Dwarka Leela to assist Krishna in his pastimes or participate in the pastimes. So Radha Rani becomes Satyabhama, and as the sun god delivers her to as Satyabhama to King Satrajit along with the beautiful Shyamantaka jewel. And that is how Satrajit comes in possession of the Shyamantaka jewel, which used to produce millions and I don't know how much quantity of gold every day. And whoever used to wear that Shyamantaka jewel was as illuminating as the sun. So it is said also, once when Satrajit was coming to Dwarka, all the residents thought Surya Dev has come to visit Krishna. Because many times demigods used to come to visit Krishna. So they go and tell Krishna that, oh, today Surya Dev has come to see him. And then when Krishna receives Satrajit, he realizes that no, this is not Surya Dev, this is actually King Satrajit who is wearing the Shyamantaka jewel, and the illumination is almost like Surya Dev. And then the whole pastime unfolds. Actually, Krishna says that when you are in possession, a citizen is in possession of such a beautiful jewel which gives gold, it should actually be given to the king. So the king can use it for the benefit of all citizens. And we know Satrajit was not agreeing. And then his brother Mare takes the jewel and goes hunting and a lion kills. And then Jambavan, you know, it goes, the lion leaves the jewel into the cave of Jambavan where a child is playing. And then Krishna's name is tarnished. Here Satrajit starts blaming Krishna, you stole the jewel, you stole the jewel. And even Lord Krishna has to bear the brunt of ill fame or infamy. So he, but and Krishna takes efforts. It's not that he doesn't care. He takes efforts to clear his name. So he actually goes into the forest and he finds out what happened to this jewel. And you know, it's described in the Krishna book. They have a fight. Jambavan does not realize this is my own worshipable Lord, Lord Ram, who has come as Krishna. So they have a fight for many days. Then he realizes, when he can't defeat Krishna, that this is none other than my worshipable Lord. So along with the jewel, he presents his daughter also, Jambavati at that time. So this, you know, jewel has, it delivers Satyabhama as a queen and it also delivers Jambavati as a queen. So that is the role Sun God plays in having this bridge between Vrindavan and Dwarka pastimes. Another case where Sun God is a very faithful servant of Lord Krishna is again in Mahabharata. So during the Mahabharata war, we know, we have read in the Mahabharata that Jayadrath, he actually played a key role in killing Abhimanyu. And Arjuna was very grief-stricken when his young son was killed very unfairly. You know, again when I was reading Bhishma Parva, when I was preparing for this class, in the Bhishma Parva it is actually described. All the rules are laid out of the war. And they are so glorious. When you read those rules, you find out that wars used to be so glorious in the olden days. We have these World War I, World War II, which all happened. And there was no rules that are followed. You know, so much of assassination of the Jewish Holocaust that happened. But if you see these wars which were fought during the Vedic times, it is said that you should be fighting, a foot soldier should fight with a foot soldier, a person who's an elephant should fight with a person in an elephant, chariot person should fight only with another person who's on a chariot. Strength should be equally matched, the weapon also should be matched. Not that one is with a gun and one is with a sword. And you are trying to kill with a sword and the person killed you with a gun. So the weapons also should be equally matched. Sword people should only fight with sword warriors like that. So such nice rules are there. Do not attack when somebody's back is to you. Do not attack when they are weak or they are in a panic situation. It is said even you cannot attack your opponent even if they are panicked. You should wait till their panic goes and then you should have the war. So such beautiful rules are there. But we know Abhimanyu was, you know, very unfairly killed. So many warriors surrounded one young boy and they killed him. They created that Chakravyuh and they killed Abhimanyu. And Jayadrath played a major role in that. So Arjuna takes a vow. He says that tomorrow I will kill Jayadrath by sunset. If I don't kill Jayadrath by sunset, then I will commit suicide. He takes that vow and Jayadrath comes to know. It's not that these vows were secret. Everybody came to know about this vow. So when Jayadrath came to know about this vow, he said, oh, very good, I will not go to the war only tomorrow. Then how will he kill? And we will see Arjuna kill himself. Nobody has to take the effort also of killing him. So Jayadrath goes and hides somewhere. And nobody knows where he has hidden. And here Krishna and Arjuna are looking for Jayadrath all over the battlefield. But they are not able to find. And obviously Krishna is omniscient, yatra yogeshwara Krishna. Wherever he is there, there will be Vijayabhava, there will be success. And Krishna does not worry about bending rules at all. When it is for establishment of dharma, he is not worried about bending rules. So he realizes that this Jayadrath is hiding somewhere and he knows that Arjuna is very true to his word. He will commit suicide if he is not able to kill Jayadrath, and obviously he doesn't want the war to end like that. Because if Arjuna commits suicide and dies, his brothers will also be very grief stricken and they might also give up the idea of fighting. So what happens was that Sandhya actually happens. They are not able to see a Jayadrath anywhere and Sandhya happens and Arjuna becomes ready to commit suicide, to enter the fire. He says that I was not able to kill Jayadrath but I had taken a vow that I will kill myself. So he actually creates a fire and he is ready to enter the fire and Jayadrath gets this news that oh, Arjuna is ready to commit suicide. So whenever an enemy is going to be killed, everybody wants to come and watch their enemy getting destroyed or killed. So Jayadrath thought, okay, let me also go and enjoy this sight of Arjuna killing himself. So he actually comes out of hiding and he stands in front of Arjuna as Arjuna is about to enter the fire. And he said, see, you couldn't kill me, now go enter the fire. And at that moment, suddenly there is bright sunlight. And Arjuna is looking at Krishna, and Krishna is saying, what, you are looking at me? It is still 2 o'clock in the afternoon, pick your weapon and kill this Jayadrath right now. And that is when Krishna reveals that he had actually, because he realized Jayadrath is hiding, he had actually done Ishara. Ishara means like a gesture to sun god to cover himself. So the sun god gets covered by the clouds, and the sun god gives actually an effect that sunset or sandhya has happened. So that is how sun god is such a faithful and loyal servant of Lord Krishna. And then when Jayadrath comes again, Krishna does that ishara, that eye gesture to sun god, and he realizes, okay, now I have to come out in my full glory. And then, you know, he comes, that sandhya is gone and he's there, it's, you know, afternoon and full bright sunshine is there. And Arjuna is able to kill Jayadrath, and that's how the war is able to go on. So this is how the sun god serves Krishna in different situations. Again, speaking of Mahabharata and the glories of sun god. So we know Kunti Maharani had served Durvasa Muni very nicely. And he blesses her with a mantra by which she can invoke any god of her choice. And she was a young girl, maybe 12 or 13 years old, young girl she was. And just, you know, playfully she wanted to test the efficacy and the power of the mantra. So she chants the mantra invoking sun god. And then sun god appears over there. She's very dazzled, like she's very, it's dazzling because sun god has, you know, brought so much light into the room. And then she doesn't know what to do. So she offers obeisances and all that. And she said, thank you so much for coming, now you can go. Because I was just testing the mantra. So sun god said, no, now that I have come, I have to give you something and go. So I will give you a son. And Kunti Maharani said, no, how can I accept a son? I'm a young and married girl, I'm still a virgin, I can't accept a son from you. He said, no, since you have invoked me, you have to take this as my prasad or my blessing. So but she says, no, then who will marry me if I have already delivered a child? I will no longer be a virgin, who will marry me? And then sun god gives her the blessing as well. He says, okay, you will get this son, but he will be born from your ear. And that is why the name Karana is there, because he was born Khan. Khan means Karana. He was born from the ear of Kunti Maharani. So again, we see this whole, you know, role with sun god plays. And even in the pastime of Gokarana and his brother, Dundukari. So we know Dundukari had done so many impious activities and he had become a ghost. And Gokarna actually wanted to deliver his brother from becoming a ghost and go back to Godhead if possible, because Gokarna was a very great devotee of the Lord. So they try, so they consult, he consults so many different sages, he consults so many different Vedic scriptures on how I can deliver my son, but nothing works. My brother, but nothing works. Because Dudukari had performed so many impious activities that nothing could help him. And then he was advised, Gokarna was advised that go and take advice from the sun god on what to do. He will be able to guide you. So again, you know, talking about sun god and what role he plays in these different pastimes. So Gokarna was so powerful that he was able to stop the sun for a moment in its orbit, and he goes and consults the sun god. And he says that, what should I do? I do want to deliver my brother Dudukari. And then it is the sun god who gave him that solution. That where, you know, under that tree, you sit down and recite the Srimad Bhagavatam for 7 days, and at the end of the 7th day, your brother will be delivered. And he will go back to Godhead, back to Golok. So this advice was also again given by the sun god. So we see the sun god plays so many different roles in terms of serving his master Lord Krishna, and he plays an integral part in actually enhancing the pastimes of Lord Krishna as well, at the same time being the life and soul of this entire universe. So that is the glories of sun god. So we'll end the class here. It's time up. Surya Dev Bhagwan ki, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Any questions, comments or corrections?
I was trying to understand, perhaps you can help me if my inference is correct regarding to the movement of the sun and the effect. You said that the sun moves just in the Bhumanda and its influence is in the over the area where it's rotating. But what about the planetary systems because the sun is not there. It's just in Bhumanda.
So the sun is situated between Bhu and Bhuvaloka. So Bhu and Bhumandal is this one where, you know, all earth is there, Jambudvip and all the other dvipas there, and Bhuvaloka is above us. So the orbit is between those two lokas, yes.
What
so,
about, for example, Yanaloka, the superior planetary systems, the sun doesn't have any effect?
No, it illuminates all the three worlds, it is said. So the sunlight reaches the upper lokas as well. Its orbit is over here, but it is the sunlight is illuminating the upper lokas as well. That is what is my understanding.
No, the effect doesn't have for inferior planetary system.
I have read that, Madhuri, that no, the sunlight doesn't reach the lower planetary system. So we see that there are different, like, you know, planets. There's the planets of the where all the snakes are living, the Naga. So they have those jewels on their heads by which, you know, the planet or their thing is illuminated. But in the very lower regions of hell, it is dark.
What I'm asking is trying to understand the effect of time, because you mentioned that time happened because the influence of the movement of the sun, and the influence of the sun is, as you said, involved in between the loka. So the influence of the sun in upper planetary system and in lower planetary system is different, and the time also it's manifested in
as differently, yes, Madhuri. Definitely the time effect is different. So it is mentioned that when we complete our 6 months, that Uttarayana, Dakshinayana, you know, how the sun moves on the northern side and southern side, I think that constitutes one day and one night in Pitruloka. So the sun has, obviously based on the distance from the sun of all the different planets, it has different time effects. So we've also heard the demigod's time frame is so long because our 6 months is one day of the demigod. So we've heard these differences in the time calculations. So what we are reading over here is concerning the Bhumandal, the timing that affects us, where we see the 12 months and all that, that is for this Bhumandal that we are seeing. But it will obviously have different time connotations in the upper planetary systems and different connotations in the lower planetary systems.
It means, for example, we different bhashas, the demigods also living there, the influence of time should be the same, like our Bharata Bhasha.
From my limited understanding, yes, Madhuri, on this plane, I think the time effect will be the same, which, you know, this. You know how it's a stack of series, we understand that the stack of series, the structure of the universe. So this one series, which is Bhumandala, which is consisting of different varshas, if my understanding is correct, then they will have the same time frame because they are on this horizontal plane.
Also at the same time, sorry, just trying to learn, because we also know that the gods, they have their embassy in
yes.
So they probably they can see more the difference of the
because they can do interplanetary travel.
The influence up here is like this, and upstairs, or up, it's quite different.
Yes. Yes. Because, for example, when Kali Yuga happens on Bhumandala, there is like a dark cloud, so the demigods can see there is Kali Yuga time, so they can see that influence of time. And it said, because during even Dwapar Yuga, when Yudhishthir Maharaj used to do sacrifices, the demigods used to come and take the offerings from the sacrifices. But then when they see Kali Yuga has started, they don't visit this mandala anymore because there is Kali Yuga going on and they can see that influence, the dark influence of time. So you're right, and yesterday also we saw, no, like how the sun is travelling in different residences. So we saw Indradev's residences on Man Parvat, Yamaraj's residences on Man Parvat. So their residence might be somewhere else, like you said, and their planet might be somewhere else. So they definitely can see that change in time and the influence of time.
If you allow me another question that it came out after this class, it was quite interesting seeing some after the class, very insightful, a lot of information. It's regarding to the past time that you said about when Krishna killed Putana and this in this universe. In another universe it's also starting the past time to kill Putana, but according to how we can reconcile that when Krishna killed Putana and gave her also the ability to be liberated and
become the Sakri in the spiritual world.
And how can we then that he's killing constantly different universe, Putana, all the 3 months as well.
Yeah, or even the Mahabharata war.
Oh, yeah.
So many people killed.
How is the same Bhutana, or it's the mentality of Bhutana, it's personified different living entities, different pastimes, or?
So Mataji, this was also asked in relation to the Pandavas, I remember. Like, you know, for example, if the Pandavas are here, then obviously in the next moment their pastime is happening somewhere else also. So I don't remember when Maharaj was giving an answer, I don't remember correctly what he said, but from my understanding of what I remember was that yes, the pastimes are happening everywhere, and it's just as the Lord expands, some of his associates also expand and they assist the Lord in his pastimes. But there are other associates. So for example, it is said that when the I was talking about the 4 types of destruction that we just studied in the 12th canto, and the final destruction is when the soul realizes its position as the servant of Lord and is able to go out of this material world. So that time it is said that a person who has perfected his life as a Vaishnava in this world, they don't straight away go to Golok Vrindavan. They first are given, you know, a chance to be part of pastimes of Krishna which are happening in any other universe. There they go practice, you know, with Krishna, serving Krishna in that planet, and then they go back. So I am feeling reconciling both your questions. So some of the associates of the Lord also expand with the Lord and they like perform pastimes in different universes. But then there are jivas, for example, like us, who perfect their life, and then they are also given an opportunity to take part as, depending on whatever rasa they might have. Someone might have vidya rasa, so they might take part in that particular Mahabharata war or something like that, and there they perfect their life and they go back to the spiritual world. So both the things reconcile over there, and that's what I think I heard from one of the lectures which the Maharaj was giving, that yes, they expand, like Pandavas for example, they expand. So I'm assuming Bhutana, all these people expand to assist the Lord in their pastimes.
Can we understand that the disadvantage of Bhutana is a pure devotee and she is taking the form of a demon to assist Krishna in his pastimes in the universe?
Yes.
Or can be the mentality of Bhutana that is personified for different living entities.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I'll be speculating if I say anything about that.
Just trying to question.
Yes.
I have also another question, if you don't mind. But again, your class was really very good. Thank you, Mata. It's about the function of the sun. Because you said he is very dutiful servant of the Lord and he doesn't do any physical movement or try only 1 second here. Because the responsibility that he has regarding to the other living entities, the benefit of the other living entities. So based on that, that means his qualification to be able to assume such important position as a devotee, as a person, because depending the benefit of the life of other living entities. So can we understand that also when we, some kind of other living entities or devotees, assume responsibility that involve the benefit or influence with others, the demand or the importance of the qualification for them, can we understand that it's very important? Consider that it's not everybody can take position, it has to be a qualified one.
So are you saying that learning from the sun god devotee should also take position of responsibility and stability, give stability to other living entities and assume responsibility? Is that what you're asking? Or if we do that, will we become sun god?
Extrapolating a bit in our practical experience, the importance of being qualified to assume responsibility.
100%, Mataji. Because all these controllers, so his one more name of Surya Dev is Surya Narayan. Surya Narayan means he's actually an expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is also mentioned in some places. So definitely, that is something we learn from the Sun God or any faithful servant of the Lord. Where, you know, we are obedient servants of the Lord, not even one, you know, second he goes here and there in this orbit. So definitely if devotees, like that is why we see Srila Prabhupada's life also. How much responsibility he was assuming at that particular age It is mentioned also, Srila Prabhupada did not want to come to the material world, but Krishna actually forced it, no, you go, I will be there with you. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada took that responsibility of spreading Krishna consciousness, translating so many books, staying awake in the night, opening temples, inspiring disciples. So, definitely that is something which we learn from any faithful servant. And these demigods, and they are all actually very empowered living entities who are actually servants of the Lord. So, yes, definitely we learn that particular quality from them.
Quite important to consider the needs of others,
more than my own needs, yes. Definitely. Putting Krishna in the center and serving everyone as a servant of Krishna, yes. Thank you.
One question, like, out of curiosity,
it's off,
you know, because we are reading the description of the movement of the sun and this chariot and how it's riding so fast. But then if sun is riding on the chariot all the time, then he's got other things to do also, right? So does it get off or how does it work?
So Prabhuji, I was also wondering this. And it is described, it will come further in the next two verses also, and I think in the next chapter also it comes. His chariot, like, you know, he has other things to do, but his chariot itself, we've heard the size of his chariot. It's so huge, it is bigger than even some of the planets. So when he's riding, I'm thinking he'll be able to do so many things while being on the stage. He doesn't have to sit like this and keep looking so that light comes out from him. Obviously. His chariot is huge. It's bigger. We know the size of the sun is bigger than so many other planets. So his chariot is huge. It is said there are 60,000 sages who are sitting and glorifying him every day, and he's imparting Vedic knowledge. So that all that school, you know, there is a school also going on why he is rotating on his orbit. So like you said, yes, he does all these things. He's imparting Vedic knowledge to so many people. There are so many sages who are sitting and glorifying him. There are some who are on the wheels. You know, there are different activities which will come up. The vaikilyas and all that. So yes, he is doing other activities as well. He is married. He has two wives also. It's in, I think, Chaya and Sandhya or something. Two wives. He has children as well. So he has proper life going on in that chariot.
But that's the planet, Madhuri, or there is that chariot, is that itself is the planet, or there is a planet separate to the chariot?
Good question.
It's a bit like a proper explain, you know, that the sun, the three levels of Brahman, when he gave the example of the Brahman, Paramatma, Bhavan, to understand the sun planet and the sun itself is different. It has its own identity and as a living entity, but it has his area, the influence, and all this that the sun itself has.
So Prabhuji's question is that sun chariot itself the sun planet? And I'm thinking yes, Prabhuji, because we are talking about the orbit, no? So that's the sun which is going around, no? It's not that the sun is somewhere else and Surya Dev has gone on a ride. So it is the sun which is going on. So yes, that chariot is the sun planet. That's what I'm saying. That's why its size is given. It's so huge. It's his home and it's the planet. Yes. Thank you. Any other questions? Let me ask. Grantha Srila Prabhupada ki. Srila Prabhupada ki.